This is Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station, part of the Attention Talk Network. Its sister stations include Attention Talk Video, your ADHD talk show station, our subscription-based newsletter, Attention Talk News, your ADHD news source. Each media channel can be accessed at their respective URLs, attentiontalkradio.com, attentiontalkvideo.com, and attentiontalknews.com. Keep up with all the media channels on our Facebook page, found at facebook.com/attentiontalkradio.
Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, ADHD and Attention Coach, Jeff Copper. Tonight is Wednesday, October the 29th in the year 2014 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and our topic, what you need to know as you collaborate with your prescriber. And with us in our virtual studio is Dr. Thomas Brown. This is an interesting topic and a great show that we have lined up for you tonight. I think you're going to find Dr. Brown's thoughts on this very, very insightful. We're going to talk about the real world when it comes to working with your mental health provider and stimulant medications. This will be the last show this month for ADHD Awareness Month, and we're very thrilled about this. We've had quite a lineup of what we've been calling our ADHD Dream Team, which include Dr. Hallowell, Dr. Barkley, Dr. Brown, and Dr. Rostain. We'll get into the meat of the show in a second, but real quickly, some announcements. Everyone, there's a great website, ADHDfund.com, which is all about crowdsourcing funds. It's basically to raise money for ADHD research, particularly smaller pieces of research that would really help answer some questions out there to move us forward. So I encourage you to check that out and or donate. And also the annual CHAD conference, that's the Children and Adults with Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder annual conference, is around the corner, November the 13th to the 15th in Chicago O'Hare. It's not too late to get your reservations. I encourage you to check this out. If you've never been to an ADHD conference, you've got to go. It's all about the tribe. You'll certainly learn a lot from the experts, but you'll learn as much when you're in the halls talking to other people with ADHD and the experts as you will actually sitting in them. So for more information on that, go to chadd.org. And so let's get into the meat of the show. Due to time constraints, we did pre-record this with Dr. Brown. I think you'll find fascinating. So let's roll the tape and hope you enjoy. Welcome. We're here with Dr. Thomas Brown, who's a clinical psychologist who received his PhD from Yale University and is a fellow of the American Psychological Association. He maintains private practice in Hamden, Connecticut, specializing in assessment and treatment of high IQ children, adolescents, and adults with ADD and related problems. He's an assistant clinical professor of psychiatry at Yale University School of Medicine and associate director of the Yale Clinic for Attention and Related Disorders. He's a frequent lecturer and presenter at various organizations nationwide and around the world. He's published articles in professional journals and is the author of a number of books, which include award-winning Attention Deficit Disorder, The Unfocused Mind, Children and Adults, and Smart But Stuck, Emotions in Teens and Adults with ADHD. You can learn more about Dr. Brown and get his books by going to his website at drthomase.com. And with that, Dr. Brown, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jeff. I'm glad to be here.
You know, I really liked listening to one of your presentations at a conference. And I was anxious to kind of go on the show because so much in coaching, I'm not a mental health provider, but so much I do a lot of coaching with people about how to speak with their mental health provider and to kind of collaborate with them. Because if you can't articulate what's going on, it's difficult for the mental health provider to really kind of interpret what's going on. And I like to try to facilitate that collaborative type thing so that they're bringing to the table and they're conscious of it. And a lot of people will speak to, like, looking to providers, but you're the first person I really had that really articulated really kind of the realities
out there with regard to providers and the need to kind of collaborate. So I want to kind of kick things off, and is that if you got a diagnosis and you're considering medications, one of the things that you advocate, Dr. Brown, is to get a diagnosis, to get a complete physical exam many times, because ADHD can mask as really kind of something else, or something else can mask as it. And you talk about people starting with the right expectations. Can you just talk about that for a little bit?
Yeah, I think it's really important to be realistic about the fact that a lot of physicians and APRNs and others who may prescribe medicines for ADHD have had very little training to understand ADHD as we now understand it. And in fact, I have talked with a number of, I teach in a medical school, and I'm also talking with people in other medical schools, both students and faculty. And the reality is that even today, most of the people who are, pediatricians will get a little more training on ADHD and medications for children, but certainly the adult providers and many of the pediatricians don't get any more than about a half an hour of training throughout the years of their medical school training to deal specifically with ADHD.
30 minutes.
Yeah.
That seems like, if I'm listening to the show and I've got ADD, I'm thinking that's just not right. I mean, 30 minutes seems to be
right,
very low.
The reality is there's a lot that they have to cram into the curriculum for a medical school. You know, that the people who are coming out as graduate physicians and are having to learn a lot about multiple body systems and the interaction between them. And there's an amazing amount of data that's coming out with research constantly in various subspecialties. And it's difficult to get enough time in the curriculum to be able to teach this sort of stuff. Now, it doesn't mean that nobody knows anything about it, because the fact is there are a number of prescribers who have taken workshop courses. I've been teaching courses, for example, at the American Psychological Association, at the American Psychiatric Association for the last 15 years. With people who pay extra money when they come to the annual convention to take courses that help them to understand better about ADHD and about how it can be treated. And there are other courses done elsewhere by other specialists. There are many who read books and articles and are really pretty much up to date on it. And so I'm certainly not saying that no prescriber knows what he or she is doing. That's not the case. But what I am saying is that simply because a person is a good general practitioner, internist or even a good pediatrician, does not necessarily mean that they have much expertise and training for dealing with ADHD as it is now understood.
And
so it's important to ask about that.
And just to provide some balance here, is 30 minutes doesn't sound like a lot, but if you begin to look at the breadth of everything that they've got to know, I mean, there's lots of things that they only get 30 minutes on, so this is not necessarily the only one. Furthermore, I can tell you, Dr. Brown, I've been interviewing experts for the last 5 years, and there's been a lot of changes in the last 5 years. So not
there's
only
been
is
enormous
that,
changes in our understanding about ADHD.
And it's also true
that there are many changes in other aspects of medicine. You know, whether you're talking about cardiovascular problems or you're talking about gastrointestinal problems or gynecological problems, you know, you can name the whole range of general medicine, and then certainly in psychiatric medicine. There are a lot of changes, new medicines, new treatments, some things that we thought worked don't, some things that we didn't know about do, and there's a lot to keep up with. And my point here is simply one of saying that when you if you've gotten a diagnosis of ADHD and you're going to talk with your primary care doctor or with somebody else, a psychiatrist or an APRN whom you're looking to for help with medication, be sure to ask them ahead of time if this is something that they feel comfortable working with.
One
of the things that sometimes makes it problematic is that since the medications that are usually used most often for treatment of ADHD, they're Schedule II drugs, which means they're controlled the same way pain medicines are. And they're only used to treat ADHD and narcolepsy, the stimulant medicines. And so a lot of physicians are a little more hesitant about prescribing this, particularly if it's not a patient that they already know quite well.
if you can, I'd like to kind of hold that for, because I want to kind of get to that in a second, but I want to back up for a second and say you did a great job describing everything the physicians kind of need to know, and they have to keep up with it, but I'm also going to go to the business side. Not only do you have that, but you got the business that you're running of patients. You're dealing with Obamacare and all the administrative support and the changing technology that's kind of going in today. So when you take a look, when you step back and you look at contextually at the physicians today, it's 30 minutes is really kind of a lot. Yet, one of my goals on this show is there are some of those out there that have a particular interest in this and they keep up with it more. And if you're going out there looking to collaborate with somebody on this, having the knowledge that not everybody has this huge education, that you can begin to look for those that are, have a particular interest in this more up to date. And I want to encourage that because that's a part of the collaborative process is just not walking in and saying, I expect you to know this because everybody has their area of expertise.
Right.
But to realize that some have an interest in this and you can be better armed if you're actually looking for those ones that actually have a particular interest because they're keeping up with it. And so I really wanted to emphasize that's really kind of a big deal.
Yeah, now the question a lot of people raise about that is how do I find those people? You know, and the advice that I would offer is that if you don't know somebody who's a specialist who can make some recommendations of somebody that you can get access to, and this has to do with not only geographically can they can you get to their office, but also do they have time to see you? You know, because many of the specialists are pretty tightly booked. And then it is also a matter of does your insurance cover it?
Mm-hmm.
And does the person take insurance, and can you afford it? And, you know, these are all that are in. The other thing that enters in is insurance coverage. For example, in most insurance plans, a pediatrician being asked to do an evaluation for ADHD has someplace between 7 minutes or 15 to 20 minutes that they're getting paid for. And that's it. To be able to take a history and do a workup, it takes me 2 hours to do an adequate evaluation for somebody with ADD for the initial evaluation. And if the reimbursement for the prescriber is going to be so limited by insurance, they have to do what they can do within a very narrow time frame or find that they're doing it for free.
It was funny because just before the show we were talking about this, and as I had mentioned to you, one of the things I'm most proud of as a coach is many people will come to me with ADHD, and I'll be talking to them a little bit, and something will be kind of peculiar. And my job is not to diagnose or make any comments, but my job is to help coach them on the interaction in that office when there's a limited period of time so they can articulate as best as possible what was kind of going on. And one of the things that I was proud of is the ones that I worked with and helped them articulate it, and they've gone in and actually found out they had a different diagnosis. And so, as I say, if you're paying attention to the wrong thing, you're treating the wrong thing. And part of that process is and this all goes back to collaboration and kind of working together.
Yeah, and to realize that if you're going into to see a psychologist or a psychiatrist or a primary care doctor for help with this kind of thing, you need to be able to give them the information they need to be able to understand where you're coming from.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know, and if, for example, a person is saying they're having a lot of trouble focusing, and, oh, by the way, they also are having trouble in cutting down on how much they're smoking weed, you know, and they hide the fact that they're smoking marijuana, you know, a couple times a day, most days. Not having that information deprives the prescriber of information they need to be able to help a person make a plan that's got some chance of success.
Absolutely, so, absolutely.
It's important, for example, to know, especially with adults, many of whom are taking multiple medications, you need to be able to tell the physician or other prescriber what other medicines you're taking.
Oh, yeah. Can you hold off on that? Because that's exactly what I want to get to after we come back from the break. I want to talk about that, and I also want to talk about expectations, which is something that you talk about before you take medications that I think is absolutely huge. I've never heard anybody say anything about it, and it's spot on. We're going to go to break, but for our listeners, to learn more about Dr. Brown and get his books, I want to remind you of his website. It's Dr. Thomas, Thomase, Brown, BROWN.com, and with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio. We are CHAD, the nation's leading nonprofit organization serving the community impacted by ADHD. CHAD and Attention Magazine provide science-based information about ADHD to families, professionals, the media, and the general public. Attention is the only publication in which your paid advertising promotes the mission of leadership, advocacy, research, education, and support for the ADHD community. Interested? Advertise in Attention Magazine and CHAD's website at chadd.org or call 240-487-2314.
If you think you understand attention so well, then why are you struggling so much with it? Attention is as simple as it is complex to understand. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. It's grossly misunderstood. Consider this. Focus on the wrong thing, get the wrong solution. In our new ebook, we'll share 5 key tips and insights on managing ADHD learned from conducting more than 300 interviews with attention experts. Download our ebook today at attentiontalknetwork.com and start understanding and managing your attention today.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an EDGE Foundation coach specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function impairment make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more.
Are you always late? The Time Timer is an award-winning time management solution that's helped millions of people with ADHD manage life better. As time passes, Time Timer's bright red disc disappears. Visit timetimer.com and use the discount code ATR for 15% off.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back. We're here with Dr. Thomas Brown talking about collaborating with your mental health professional with ADHD. And before the break, we were talking a lot about education and the providers to understand, you know, where they're coming from and what's going on. Coming back, I want to talk about the medications here in a second, but before we actually start talking about them, Dr. Brown, you talk about expectations going in if you're considering medications. Can you talk about that for a second?
You know, I think one thing that I think is really important is to keep in mind that medications are limited in what they can do, and they don't help everybody, and they don't help everybody the same amount. You know, a lot of times people who have seen other people do well on medication figure that, and they'll start talking, or who themselves have had good luck with it, will talk to somebody else and say, hey, you got to get this, it's really going to help you. And we don't know that. The odds, when I talk with people about this, I say your odds of medication for ADHD helping you are about 8 for 10.
About 80%?
They're 80%. And about 20% of the people with ADHD, the medicines don't work very well. You know, now, for some, the benefits of the medicine are huge. For others, they're substantial but not huge. Others, it helps a little but not that much. And 2 out of 10, it doesn't do a damn thing.
How many start to take medications and discontinue after a short period of time?
A lot of people do, but the research is hard to get because you don't actually have that much access to people who've given up on it. But the question you also have to think about is, well, why do people stop taking medicine? Usually they stop taking it because it's either giving them trouble they don't want to put up with or it doesn't seem to be doing any good. But gets to another issue, and that is, particularly with the stimulants, which are the most widely used and usually the most effective medicines for most people with ADHD, a lot of people do not realize that the amount of stimulant a person needs has nothing to do with how old they are, how much they weigh, or how severe the symptoms are. It has only to do with how sensitive their body chemistry is. I see little kids, I see teenagers, I see adults. Most of the little kids are taking very small amounts, but there are some little kids just as small as all the rest of them, same level of symptom severity, where we have to go to the top of the adult dosing range to touch them because their bodies aren't that sensitive to it. And for them, that works well. Not many, but there are a few.
Yep.
Among the adults I see, there are some of them who are taller and fatter than I am, and I'm not a skinny person or small person. Most of the people I see who are adults are taking fairly hefty doses, but there's some of them who are a lot bigger than I am.
Yep.
And very big people who are taking very small doses, no more than you'd expect to give a typical 6-year-old. So go figure. You know, the critical element in the use of stimulants is fine-tuning.
Yep.
To be able to get the right dose for the right person at the right time of day.
Absolutely. And we, if you dig back in our archives, listeners, and you want to learn, we did some lengthy conversations with Dr. Charles Parker that talks about the variability, the different things that can impact it, and the notion of start low and go up kind of slowly, because it's not like take two aspirin, kind of calm you in the morning. It takes a little bit of time, again, to collaborate with your mental health provider, not just that you're taking them, but explain what your experience is going on so you can reveal it to them so they can work with you. Dr. Brown, I'd like to get your thoughts on this. People will call me, and I'm coaching them, and they'll say, well, my medications don't work. And a lot of times I'll try to get into conversation with them, and to me there's like kind of they pay attention to do I have a buzz? Like, did I take it and do I feel something? And if they do, then that might seem to indicate that it's working. The other side is they look to organization and like, well, I took it, but I'm not organized. And there's an old saying, pills don't teach the skills, and we talk a lot about that. But when I tell people, how can you tell if they're having an impact? What I like to say is, before you took the medications, if you sat down and you could read 5 pages of a book before you got distracted, and you're taking the medications, and now you can read 4 chapters, that would indicate that you're able to sustain focus a little bit longer and that the medications might be working. Your thoughts on that?
Well, that's good. Usually the first thing I say is you have to pay attention to the time frame.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Because there are some medicines that kick in within about a half hour when you take them. And there are others where they don't do much of anything until they've been in you for at least an hour and a half. And sometimes I've had parents who said, well, the medicine's not helping my kid. And I ask, when? When are you talking about? And they're saying, well, he gets out of bed and he's still really crabby. And they're talking about the kid's response to what they want him to do at a time when the medicine hasn't even been given to them yet,
mm-hmm.
let alone had time to kick in.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are some medications like these extended-release preparations, Vyvanse, for example, you need an hour to an hour and a half before it kicks in. Same thing with Concerta. It doesn't do much until it's been in you for an hour and a half. You may get a little benefit up front with the Concerta, but Vyvanse, it takes longer. You know, and then you have to ask, okay, well, what's the duration of action? How long does it work? How long does it do its job? And there's some of the medicines we have that typically we're told that they work 10 to 12 hours. And for some people, that's absolutely true. Maybe for many people, that's true. But there's some people only get 5 hours out of that very same medicine. You know, there's some short-acting things. We typically say, well, 4 or 5 hours for this dose. And some people get 2 and some people get 6.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important to be able to, you know, we're asking questions about is a medicine working. You have to ask when and what is it doing. And the other thing that a lot of people get lost on is the issue of rebound. If a person is taking the medicine and let's say it's something that's designed to last for, say, 6 or 8 hours. If during that first 6 or 8 hours they're feeling too wired, like they've had way too many cups of coffee, and it gets better when the medicine wears off, or they get too crabby, where every little thing is bothering them way more than most things would normally, and that gets better when the medicine wears off, or if they get too sleepy or too serious, where it's like they sort of lose their sparkle, they lose their sense of humor, they don't feel much like interacting with people, and then that gets better when the medicine wears off. Any of those things indicate that the dose is probably too high or it's not a good medicine for that person. However, if those same things, feeling too wired or too crabby or too serious, occur not during the time when the medicine is supposed to be active, but after the medicine is supposed to be wearing off, that's a completely different problem. That's a rebound. And what it means is not that the dose is too high, because that you would have seen during the earlier block of time. It means it's dropping too fast and the person's crashing. And so in that situation, you do something very different. You don't just reduce the dose, which is what you would do if they're getting that reaction during the time that the medicine is supposed to be working. Instead, you have to give them a small dose of the short-acting version of the same stuff shortly before the crash hits, so that you can then bring the curve down more slowly and they're not bringing it down too fast and crashing. You know, so things like that kind of inquiry about what happens when is really critical, and it takes some time. Yeah, the doctor has to know how to ask the right questions and listen to the answer, and the person who is the patient or the parent or collaborator of the patient needs to be able to provide the information to the prescriber. So if you're saying it's making the person really crabby, the first question would be when? Is it happening during the time you'd expect the medicine to be wearing off? Or is it something that's not happening much during the hours it's supposed to be working, but it seems to start later? Because that makes all the difference in terms of how we decide what to do about it.
As I'm listening to this, I sometimes I like to kind of go back. This show is really focused on collaborating with your prescriber. And, Dr. Brown, you just kind of nailed it. Number one, to understand a little bit, get an education a little bit about what the expectations are for the meds, and then actually be able to witness what's going so you can go back and describe to them what's going on. You know,
tell
you
them
about, you know, and tell them when and stuff like that, because it's the collaborative process that's necessary in order to get these things right. It's just not a one-way street.
Exactly.
And it's so important for you to become engaged in this process to make it work to your advantage if this is something you're going to consider. Another area that I just kind of wanted to bring up that I've heard you speak to, and that is it's a tough area, and that is research. You know, they research stimulant medications to see if they help, but there's not a lot of research done, I imagine, because it's mentally complex to research how they interact with other drugs short-term and long-term. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, there's almost no research on the interaction of other medicines with the ADD medicines. But that's not true only of ADHD medicines. It's also true that there's very little research about the interaction of medicines that are used for various other medical problems. You know, the problem is nobody's going to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
Unless there's some strong need for a particular medicine to be checked out while being ingested with another medicine, the pharmaceutical companies aren't going to pay for it, neither is the government. And so it's really important for a person who is taking multiple medications to be sure that their prescriber knows what other medicines they're taking and can give some careful thought to possible interactions, which would be either because it's just sort of clinical lore that sometimes this doesn't work out so well with that, or in a few cases there may be some indications on the prescribing information that's provided in the package insert that will say these medicines are likely to interact with those medicines and you got to be careful about them.
Very, very well put. Dr. Brown, I need to go to another break again.
Okay.
When we come back, I want to kind of circle back around and talk about the nature of stimulant drugs and their classifications and some of that impact, particularly with the relationship with our prescribers here. Again, everybody, to learn more about Dr. Brown and to get his books, Dr. Thomas, thomasebrown.com. And with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
You can't go off to school with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an Edge coach can help your student reach their full potential.
Are you always late? The Time Timer is an award-winning time management solution that's helped millions of people with ADHD manage life better. As time passes, Time Timer's bright red disc disappears. Visit timetimer.com and use the discount code ATR for 15% off.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Focus on the wrong thing? Get the wrong solution. Misunderstand attention, and you'll struggle with it. Get 5 key tips and insights on managing ADHD learned from conducting more than 300 interviews with attention experts. Download the ebook today at attentiontalknetwork.com and start managing your attention today.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to Attention Talk Radio. We're here with Dr. Brown, I'm pretty excited about this show. I really think, Dr. Brown, that we're bringing up some perspectives and some ways of looking at this thing that I don't think is mainstream out there, but is vitally important. What I want to kind of ask you right now is when we start talking about stimulants, based off of their classification, creates a lot of discussions with regard to stimulants based on how they're classified, and it creates some issues sometimes for prescribers prescribing that. So can you just kind of talk about that space a little bit, and then we'll talk about the more individual dynamics?
Well, you know, basically, the stimulants are classified as what's called Schedule II drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And all that means is the government has said that these need to be regulated in the same way that pain medications are. And the reason for that kind of regulation is that this is the class of medication that if they're misused and if a person is taking too much of them, they can potentially become addictive. And that's a fact. But the other fact that needs to be stated is that although it's possible to get addicted to these medications, the medicines that are used, usually stimulant medicines that are used for treatment of ADHD, people don't like taking them that much in terms of trying to get high. And the risks of getting caught up in problems with drugs and alcohol are greater for people with ADHD if they are not treated with medicine than if they are, at least when we're looking at children and adolescents. You know, we do know that the incidence rate for substance use disorders, for drugs or alcohol, among people with ADHD are approximately double the rates for people who don't have ADHD if they're not adequately treated. Now, treating them with medication can improve their odds. The studies have been a little controversial on this, but generally that's the direction it goes. But it's no guarantee that a person's not going to have a problem. There are a lot of people who get into drinking too much or smoking too much marijuana or taking too many pills. The controversy you hear about stimulant medication is that there are a lot of students in high schools and colleges and universities who are taking stimulant medications which are not prescribed for them.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people assume that's because they're trying to get high, and in some cases that may be true. But the primary reason that they're taking it often is they're borrowing or in some cases buying medicine from the stimulant medications that have been prescribed for one of their classmates in order to try and help them pull an all-nighter and concentrate. You know, it's like, I've got to work tonight, I've got two take-home tests to do, and I've got a term paper I've got to hand in 2 days, and I'm going to have to stay up all night, and I really need to focus, or I've got this big test coming up, and I need to focus and study. And often they're trying to make up for all the work they should have been doing in the previous 3 weeks. You know, it's similar to what used to be years ago with people would be using no-dose or gallons of coffee to try to pull an all-nighter.
Yep.
And it's also true that there are a lot of people out there who find they can focus a lot better when they've got stimulant medication in them than when they don't. Now, the difference between people with ADHD and people who don't is the stimulant medicines can help anybody focus a little better. But I think of it as sort of like you can put a hearing aid in the ear of somebody in normal hearing range and they're going to be able to hear a little bit better. But it's not going to make that much difference because their ability to hear is generally pretty decent compared to others. Put a hearing aid in the ear of somebody who's got impaired hearing and you're going to see a much more substantial improvement.
Yep.
So, go ahead.
In this particular space, in the context of collaborating with your prescriber, because of the classification of the medication, and because we talked about the level of education on ADHD and kind of related matters, to me, I do a fair number of presentations on the impact of ADHD on sports and exercise and stuff, and one of the things when I've got some time, I always talk about stimulant medications in professional sports. And in most of the professional sports, like Major League Baseball, for one of them, and some of those, you can get waivers. So if you go in and there's a long paper trail that you've got ADD, you can take these medications, even though they're classified as performance-enhancing drugs kind of across the board. But there's some athletes that are using them as performance-enhancing drugs, and when they do that and they're caught, the articles, this is an abuse issue, it's not an ADD issue, but it's poster child of, hey, there's an abuse of Adderall, which you say, and then they go, and this is the medication that's used to treat ADHD, so all of a sudden this condition gets dragged in to the context of misuse in sports enhancing, and so the physician who's dealing that particular situation hears these things, and they're human beings, and sometimes it can create a problem. So if you're if you're getting these prescriptions and, let's say, you're having to call in for extra because they're getting lost, I mean, that can get kind of suspicious.
Well,
and
yeah,
it can freak them out a little bit because they don't necessarily know what's going on. And
there's another
they don't
reason for it, too, and that is that the state governments monitor the number of prescriptions that are written for Schedule II drugs. And if you have a physician who's writing a lot of prescription for Schedule II drugs and they're not doing so within the specialty practice, the department of the government that's regulating that sort of thing might be coming and having a conversation with them. You know, and they've got to be careful that they're practicing within the scope of their license and their practice.
That's an exceptionally good point that I hadn't really thought of. In this collaborative process, I've had a few that I've coached before who said, you know, I don't take the medications all the time, yet they'll go in and, like, let's say, for example, they're going to go and see the doctor, and the doctor will write the scripts out, which, by the way, he can't give you all six. They have to be kind of post-dated. And I always encourage them is if you've gotten scripts for 6 months and you've only used five, take the one back in and give it to them and have them write you six more, because you're letting them know that you're kind of in control of that. So not only are you doing it, but they can actually document it to their files.
But it helps
for the
your
state
credibility.
Kind of
but the other thing is that you're not allowed, under federal law, you're not allowed to get more than three prescriptions at a time.
No, I'm sorry. You're right, three.
And the way that works, it used to be you could only get 1 month's supply at a time, but then about 6 years ago they changed that, although they didn't make a big announcement, and there's some prescribers who still don't know the rule. It's been changed. But they can write one today for the next 30 days, and then another one dated for a month from now, dated for the to cover the following 30 days, and then another one dated for 2 months from now to cover the third period of 30 days. But they cannot, they're labeled so they cannot be filled until the date that's on the prescription comes up. And that's designed to provide a protection so that people are not getting huge quantities of these medicines all at one time. And there's less likelihood of abuse. It doesn't work perfectly, but it's a sensible precaution.
My focus here, and you've done a great job bringing some real points to this, is in the context of collaborating with your prescriber, is be aware that they're under scrutiny and just the classification
That's right.
of these things. And we're collaborating with them with what's kind of going on and realizing what they're up against. And just be careful, because that can really help the dynamics of your relationship with that individual. So, Dr. Brown, is there anything that we haven't covered that we should shed some light on with regard to this topic?
Well, I can tell you that one thing that I've found is that if you've got a kid who's going off to college or to a boarding school and they're taking medicine, well, boarding schools is less a problem because usually at that secondary school level, the nurses on the school campus control the medicines. But if you have somebody who's going off to college and they're taking medicines, they need a little bit of preparation for it. And usually what I like to say is, hey, look, you know, don't go announcing to people that you are taking this medicine. I had a kid one time who went back to his university saying, boy, am I glad I got this medicine. It's really helping me focus a lot better. I'm doing better on my tests. I'm taking better notes. And within 24 hours, he had eight different people knocking on his door wanting to buy or borrow, in quotes, some of his medicine. And, you know, kids who know that you've got this medicine, other students are likely to be trying to borrow or buy some of that medicine. And it's important for the student to understand that they've got to protect it for a couple of reasons. One is if they start giving it out to friends, they're going to quickly run out of their own supply because one person tells another, and pretty soon they're going to be identified as a place to go to get it. And they're not going to be able to get it refilled in time to keep their supply up. The second thing is that they have to protect it from being stolen. If you put it in your shaving kit or the bucket you carry your shampoo and stuff into the bathroom and you're in a shared bathroom in a dormitory, you can be in there lathered up taking a shower and come out and you've got your bottle at the top of your shaving kit, so you remember to take it, and then you come out and find the bottle's gone and you don't know where it went. You know, and so one needs to take precautions. Don't leave it out on your desk. You don't leave it out on your table. You stash it away so that it's not going to be readily visible to somebody else. But the other thing that it's important for students to know in that situation is if you give out a Schedule II medicine to somebody else, whether you get any, you don't even need to get a penny for it, under federal law you're dealing. And you could do it 100 times and nothing would happen, or you could do it once, and that's the time that stupid kid goes out and falls off a balcony or gets into a motor vehicle accident. They do a tox screen at the emergency department, and pretty soon the person who supplied the stimulant is going to get hit with a question of, how did you happen to be giving out this medicine to this person who didn't have a prescription for it? You know, and,
exclamation point.
So it's important, I think, for kids who are taking that kind of medicine to dormitories in colleges and universities to understand that they need to protect it. What I say to them is, be totally anal about it from the get-go. A, don't advertise you've got it, and B, if somebody asks you for it, right from the get-go say, I'm sorry, I'd like to be able to help you, but I can't. My doctor's crazy, and if I turn up not giving enough medicine, not having enough to last me, he's not going to give me more, and I'll get cut off. And so I just can't do it. Dude, I'd like to be able to help you, but if you want it, you have to go talk to your doctor and get your own.
Exceptionally well put. Dr. Brown, you're so articulate on some of these things, and I'm really glad that you brought that up, because I had it missed my radar, but that college space is a particular area, because if you do announce and advertise it, it you know, people are aware of some of that stuff that they impart by the media, and so you need to protect yourself. So, Dr. Brown, have we covered everything now?
Well, I'm sure we haven't covered everything, but we've covered quite a bit.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been very enlightening. I know it's been very helpful for our listeners. You certainly brought
out
some
key points.
Thank you,
Jeff. I appreciate it.
Everybody, to learn more about Dr. Brown, DrThomasEBrown.com. And thanks again, Dr. Brown.
Thank you, Jeff. It's been a pleasure.
Everybody, catch us next week for another great edition of Attention Talk Radio. Take care.